Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave Krueger. Welcome to the Stress Mastery and Peak Performance series. We're going to look at some of the latest research and application on optimum performance under pressure and practical understanding and strategies you can use for yourself and your clients in business, the arts, and sports. There's a lot of information I want to share with you. First, the outline is a synopsis of the important aspects, and it's fairly annotated so that hopefully you can listen for understanding and application without having to take a bunch of notes. This is being recorded for online playback. The ports are at the page you were sent when you downloaded the outline. And my hope is to be able to co-create with you in this collaboration a peak experience in itself. Now, I'm doing something a little bit different this time. Instead of sending you an email beforehand to ask you these two questions, I wanted to ask you once we're all together and to get your immediate response. So if you'll just say your name, you do have to claim that, and the response to my first question is, if we were to sit down face-to-face right now, what's the most important question you have about this topic that we're going to spend 4 seminars on? Don't think about it too long. Who's got a response?
The most stress management.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, the stress management.
Okay. What's the question or the focus?
Just when you get overloaded with many things on your mind, what do you manage first?
Okay, that's a great question. Our first seminar is going to be on stress mastery strategies and tools. So great question. And who was this?
This is Scott Groenevelt.
Scott, welcome. Okay, super. Who else? What is your most pressing question, your most important question about this topic area?
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Catherine Sabinski, and I'd like to learn, be more comfortable with focusing on when the client is talking, to be able to not get unfocused because of my own emotions or my own, but to stay focused on the client.
Okay, great question and really important, and that's part of mastery of states of mind and focus. So, yes, great. And the other person who spoke, would you identify yourself and say the question?
My name is Sarah Fiedeholtz, and I would really love to learn some strategies that can be taught to my clients for universally, like, pinpointing the triggers for their stress. So how to coach them through figuring out what is triggering them and how to move forward in their lives.
Okay, super. So far, everything you've asked, we're going to deal with in the first seminar. So I hope you'll stick around for the other three because there's a lot of what you have each asked about that is in this first seminar. So hold on, and then we'll look at what else we're going to do. So thank you. Who else?
Hi, this is Whitney Henry. I was kind of hoping to have some kind of explanation for how to help my clients with long-term transformation with their stress habits. So not just immediate relief, but also how to, over the next many years or throughout their lifetime, keep those habits in place.
Okay. So you want to help them download a model of how to manage that can become part of their identity.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. That's exactly what makes change permanent, when we help someone transform not just behavior, but the model of who and what they are, their core identity, because one of the most powerful forces of the human psyche is we always return to our identity. No matter what we do or what kind of behavior we do, we'll always return to our identity. So that's important as we work with clients in mentor coaching to help them transform how and who they see themselves to be, not just changing their behavior. So that's huge, and that's a part of the mind and brain sciences applied to mentor coaching, kind of the backdrop of all of this. So thanks, Whitney. Who else?
Hello, this is Vince Manda.
Hey.
Interested in, after a stressful situation, how to get past it easier.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Thank you. Any others? Okay, second question, your first impression. If you were to walk away 4 weeks from now saying this is one of the most important seminar series you've ever attended, what would you walk away with? Your immediate response. And manage the background noise whenever you make movements. Your microphone is picking it up even though you don't hear it. So maybe go on mute, star six, until you're ready to talk. So what do you want to walk away with? Also manage the background noise. We're hearing all of the movement that's happening, paper rustling and that sort of thing. So if you would, do a mute star six, because there are a number of people on the call.
Dave, could you repeat the question? I didn't get the whole question.
If you were to walk away from this series 4 weeks from now saying this is one of the most useful series you've ever attended, what would you walk away with?
Well, for me, it would just be knowing that I learned a whole lot of tools to deal with different types of stressful situations.
Okay, tools. That's great.
And be able to teach them.
And what?
And be able to teach them.
Okay. All right, super. We are going to be looking at pressure management tools and stress mastery tools. So absolutely, we'll do that. Thank you. And who else? What else?
This is Sarah. I think just an increased again, I'd like to echo on the universal tools, but also just an increased confidence in my coaching that I would feel more confident to, you know, with my understanding of stress and what that means for my client and how to walk through that with them universally for all of my clients, I think would be great.
Okay, great. Yeah, that sounds really important. Thank you. Who else? What else?
Hi, this is Catherine, and I think that part of learning to focus helps with the stress. I think that what's happening when I'm coaching is I get stressed and so I lose focus. And so I'd like to walk away from this having the techniques to use for and with clients to pass on to clients as well as use myself, but to pass on, I like that. What somebody said about permanent change, or what you said, Dr. Kruger, about permanent change, because that's really what we're doing to help people is to help them become better.
Can you specify specifically what you have in mind when you say a technique for
there is a lot of background noise. A technique to when I'm coaching to be able to breathe and let the client's challenges come through to me so that I'm not upended and become unfocused like I am right now probably, but so that I can stay focused on them and not get wrapped up in myself on how I'm feeling and how stressed I am because I'm trying to respond to them. So for that optimum, you know, be my optimal self under pressure to help them be their optimal self.
Got it. And you're absolutely right about how we establish a model for that. And I think the most important kind of preparation that we can do to work with a client is to have a way, just very briefly, to get grounded and centered so that we are totally focused on the client. And by being grounded and centered, we have access to all of our states of mind and all the information so that we can be totally immersed in resonating with the client and co-creating the story from the client's point of view. So that is a necessary, I believe, prerequisite to working with a client, and it establishes a model for regulation and balance so that we have that to engage with the clients. Every time before I receive a call from a client or before I do a series like this or a training, I will spend a minute to really focus, get grounded and centered, have a mantra, and we'll talk about that in just a few minutes, so that I'm totally grounded and centered and into a state for the peak performance of that particular task. And we'll talk about how you engage different states of mind for different peak performance. So thank you for that input. We will also have a time for discussion. We'll be back on discussion mode for a few minutes at the end. So if you have questions or comments, jot them down, and we'll return to that and have a discussion time. I'm going to put us on lecture mode so you don't have to worry about the background noise. So hold on. Okay, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about stress mastery strategies and tools in this first seminar. When I was in the singles ski lift line at Steamboat Springs about to advance to the chairlift, an instructor behind me who had five kids all about age six asked me if I would mind if two of them rode the chairlift with me. Well, of course, I welcomed the opportunity. As we got on the lift, the next little girl had a kind of an awkward seating and seemed to slump a little bit as we were riding and talking. As we got close to the end of the lift to ski out of the chair, she said in a really timid voice, "I'm scared to get off." And I said, "I understand." And then I asked, "Do you know who Laurie Hernandez is?" It was just after the 2016 Olympics when Laurie had won a gold in the team event and a silver on the balance beam. The little girl looked at me and said, "Yes." I asked her if she would like to know what Laurie did when she was scared about performing her gymnastics routine. She immediately said, "Yeah." I told her that Laurie did three things. She pictured herself doing a perfect routine, a vision of exactly how she would perform. Then, the instant before she began, she took a deep breath to breathe in relaxation, breathe out any tension, and said to herself, "I got this." Well, my new little buddy seemed pretty interested in this and sat just a little bit more upright. And as we were a few seconds from getting off the lift, I asked her what she would say to herself as she got off. She said in a timid, hesitant voice, "I got this." And I nudged her. I said, "Say it like you really mean it." Then in a voice that seemed to channel all of her 5 years into someone I would not want to meet in a dark alley, she said very confidently, "I got this." As she skied out of the chair perfectly, she stopped, turned to look at me from about 10 feet away, the same instant we both did a one-inch air fist bump. We both smiled, and then she skied off with her instructor. So, let's have a brief overview now. In the last few years, we've seen revolutionary changes in our knowledge of the mind and brain sciences. Neuroscience, psychology, performance sciences, to apply new tools to engineer optimum performance. I want to synthesize and integrate these new frontiers to help you consistently attain peak performance mentally and physically. Neuroscientists estimate that 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. This means that the vast majority of our unconscious responses are based on established algorithms for our behavioral, emotional, and attachment patterns. This operating system ghostwrites our beliefs, emotions, and patterns of behavior and attachment, the shadow story system that operates on unconscious autopilot. A script refers to the default modes of expectations, experiences, and responses of how we write our stories. Our expectations inform our attachment and behavior patterns that result in a typical, often stereotypical, response to certain situations. As we repeat patterns, our brain wires as the default mode. The script for each scenario in our lives operates largely without conscious thought. Think about how at a family gathering or at a board meeting, we tend to sit in the same seat each time. We look over the menu, but then we order the same thing. So to deconstruct this system, to understand the algorithms of patterns of attachment relationships and performance behaviors, we have to examine this default mode, this script. Change involves breaking the script. We can engage in self-directed neuroplasticity, in other words, to create new behavior side by side with unlearning old automatic behavior and change our brains in the process. The approaches to changing behaviors that work also consider what this does to your personal stories. So in this series, we'll examine how to create new line software and write new code for your brain. A systematic approach to create changes of mind, brain, and behavior that last. When Dr. Helen Czerski was studying physics at Cambridge, she was in her grandmother's kitchen looking at textbooks and charts of quantum mechanics. Her grandmother looked at her material and said, "What can you do when you know that?" Dr. Czerski has spent an expert lifetime answering her Nana's question and the unspoken follow-up question that she knew her Nana thought but didn't say as she waited for the answer. And why should I care? So, we're about to answer Nana's two questions, spoken and unspoken. Science is about patterns, the fundamental laws and principles that form the foundation of our lives and world. The brain is a pattern-seeking organ. Many of the methods to facilitate change are actually contrary to the way the mind and brain work. So it's not about having all the answers, since most of our operating system is unconscious and not directly accessible anyhow, but about having the informed framework to ask the right questions and an evidence-based system to implement strategic change for best results. In other words, to create an optimum performance story. So, how many of you know how to program a computer? Algorithms, pattern sequences. An algorithm is simply a finite series of steps used to solve a problem or make a decision. I'm going to teach you how to reprogram your mind software and rewire your brain hardware. The two proven systems that I've developed to apply to stress mastery and optimum performance are these. The first one we're going to deal with in this seminar, the neural conditioning chart, and this is in your outline. It's a systematic way to identify stressful emotional triggers and to rewire planned ideal responses for peak performance. What more could you ask, right? Two, the roadmap system, and that's the acronym for the seven steps of how to systematically understand and write new code for our stories, a strategic way to deconstruct and understand personal performance, to systematically write new code for mind, brain, and behavior to perform under pressure. Now, a kind of a sidebar, a word on the limits of algorithms. This is from another guy in Houston, from Harris County Judge Ed Emmett. He said, you know, for Houston, Texas, 3 500-year floods in 3 years means we're either free and clear for the next 1,500 years or something has seriously changed. So there are limits to algorithms, but they can inform us tremendously. So first we're going to talk about several minds, two brains, and one focus. First, several minds. A state of mind is like a software program that determines what we perceive and then how we process information, as well as how we respond. Our minds consistently monitor and interpret to give us a running account of what's happening, what it means, and what to do. Each mindset, each state of mind, is its own software system. It's complete and internally consistent. Mindsets frame the ongoing process of our operating system. Mindsets include powerful beliefs that inform the stories we write about ourselves. Researchers at Norwegian University of Science and Technology recently discovered that the brain creates multiple independent maps while finding its way in the physical world. The human brain basically operates like a Google map. When a new situation arises, a different map's booted up. We have several different states of mind or mindsets for different situations. This explains how important it is to understand the context and the framing for different situations, and for us to have a cohesive story to organize and direct that series of maps. State always comes first. The state of mind, then strategy and story. This is important to remember in mentor coaching, because how many times have you heard someone move directly into a strategy, looking at how to deal with something, how to fix it, rather than looking at the framework, the context of a state of mind. A state of mind boots up a particular software program that has predetermined meanings, connections, and internal associations. So it's exactly like a software program. Within a state of mind, just as with any software program, the patterns then are predictable and consistent. When Susan gets angry with someone on the executive team, she'll become more authoritative and demand better performance. When Robert's confronted with a challenging task, he'll engage an attachment pattern to get someone to make a decision that he can then sign off on. This systematic approach to breaking the script, and think about, that's exactly what we do as coaches. That's what we get paid for, is to break the script. Now, how to do that and to make it tolerable is part of the art of that science. So the systematic way of breaking the script directly addresses the default mode of algorithms that are played out in relationships, behaviors, emotions. To revise the story, we first have to understand the script and then have a systematic way to address change, to recognize and own the process, to assess what to do differently, and to create a systematic way of change. The initial step of perturbation of the default mode, to break the script, in other words, is by definition uncomfortable because it breaks the script and the automatic responses. A default mode, the script, has its own continuity, and we feel comfortable when things are certain. We're uncomfortable with change when we activate new processes that are different and disrupt the default mode. But that's how we learn. We don't learn when we follow the script and it works. 100% of your clients will come to you and need coaching when their script hasn't worked. A stimulus, such as a memory, a thought, a person, a place, can instantly shift our attention and focus. Once we focus on the stimulus, it immediately boots up a state of mind that then determines how we perceive and process everything that follows. Two crucial elements in performance become how to boot up an optimum mindset and then how to fully develop skills within that mindset for the best results. To enhance capacity and performance requires deliberate practice and systematic execution. Those are two significant principles we're going to develop. We'll come back to that. Deliberate practice and systematic execution for peak performance. The brain rewires by focused attention on two things, possibilities and new experiences, and those are very related. The repetition of these new experiences then encodes new learning in neural circuitry. This is part of neuroplasticity. So, an application here, a practical application, is to look at shadow and surface stories. The surface story is our usually logical, conscious intention and aspiration. These are my goals. This is what I want from life. Now, remember we talked about only about 5% of our operating system is conscious. So the shadow story has 5 to at most 10% of our awareness. The shadow story that ghostwrites many behaviors, from that 90-95% of our operating system that's automatic and unconscious may include beliefs like, well, I can't really get what I want, or the system keeps me from doing what I need, or I really wasn't meant to have significant wealth. Now, when the surface and shadow stories go in opposite directions, stuckness results. The surface story and the shadow story express the desire and the obstacles, often simultaneously. The surface story is simple. I want to generate more income and create wealth. And that can be countered by a shadow story that may not even be totally conscious, but, well, I don't think I have what it takes, or I wasn't born to have money, or what if I try my best and can't do it, and then I'd be really embarrassed. We may want one thing, but unconsciously do something else. What results reveals which is stronger. An inhibition is often the expression of a conflict between the surface and the shadow story, simply in an attempt to avoid the dissonance of conflict. If we avoid something, we don't have to deal with the discomfort of it. Inhibition then seemingly becomes a cure for conflict. Remember this. The biggest obstacle that keeps you from having what you want is the story you create about why you can't have what you want. I can't find the time. I'm not sure it'd be worth it. I may not know what to do. Now, and again, this is all in your outline, the essence of it. Let's look at two brains, the two systems, the top-down and bottom-up systems. We have essentially two independent brain operating systems with competing interests. They're trying to balance urges with logical reasons, the two brain systems. The most pressing conflict is not between us and the rest of the world, but between these two brain systems. We want to save for the future, yet enjoy spending money on a purchase now. We want to be healthy, balanced with cheesecake, especially when it has strawberry topping. The balance can be tipped by even just adding something like strawberry topping. But again, you'll have to insert your own story here. When we write two stories simultaneously that go in opposite directions, it's not a metaphor, it's brain chemistry. One example is the reward center of the brain, the nucleus accumbens, releases the pleasure chemical dopamine with anticipation of a purchase, for example. The pain center of the brain, the insula, responds when we have to give up our money to pay for it. The bottom-up system one runs automatically on impressions and feelings. It's immediate and intuitive. This subcortical circuitry notifies the neocortex, the brain's frontal topmost areas, from below. Bottom-up consists of our impulses, habits, reflective attention, even our intuition. It's quick and impulsive. It requires focus and strategies to develop everything from self-awareness to deliberate planning, to not just be impulsive, in other words. The bottom-up system one operates automatically, and it can't be turned off at will. This makes errors of intuitive and emotional origin difficult to prevent. And we're going to talk about that. The top-down system two is the conscious, logical seat of self-control for executive functioning and reasoning. This top-down system determines voluntary attention and choice, the consideration and deliberation of decision-making. So when the bottom-up system prevails, decisions shift toward impulsivity, overspending, overborrowing, overeating. Other addictive habits can occur without conscious regulation or direction. A particularly challenging problem is the presence of unconscious biases that we have pre-programmed into the bottom-up system without conscious awareness by the top-down system. We may even consciously abhor some of these biases. We'll return to that. So an awareness of the factors that lower our threshold to resilience against impulsivity becomes essential to recognize. Willpower is simply a triumph of the top over the bottom system. Willpower means we stay focused on our goals despite the urges of impulses and passions along with the default mode of habits. Willpower can be influenced by a number of variables that can deplete it. Stress, sustained mental effort, even low glucose. These can all lower the threshold. We'll talk more about that in discussion if we have time. Now, let's look at one focus. We've looked at several brains, two minds, now one focus. A pro tennis player was having an outstanding season in her career. We met just before she left for Wimbledon, where she was one of the top seeds. She was having difficulty with her serve, and her usual powerful, flawless serve was strained. I asked her to take us frame by frame through her usual flow pattern of serve, then to describe what she was experiencing now that was different, sort of a split screen. In sequence, though, when she got to the point of tossing the ball in the air, she had an instantaneous flash of her coach looking at her critically. This literal nanosecond of moving from the flow state of motor memory of the procedural process that had become automatic disrupted that well-grooved pattern. When she instantaneously and imperceptibly moved from total reliance on her bottom-up system one of automatic superb performance, well-grooved from thousands of hours of deliberate practice, to her top-down system two, to think about what she was doing, she hit the ball slightly differently. At her level of play, this meant everything. So we're going to return to the remedy of that. The power is in the focus. The unconscious mind does not distinguish positive versus negative or recognize future versus past, but only focuses on the here and now. This is the power of selective attention. The brain works like a camera. Out of all the possibilities that you can choose to focus on, it determines the awareness and aligns the energy field of the brain for attention, just like where you focus the camera. Attention holds the key to choice architecture. Attention serves to regulate emotion and therefore the state of mind that's chosen for a task. Successful performance execution depends on directing and sustaining focus to a specific choice and ignoring others. Here's an application. My wife gifted both of us with an enrollment in the BMW Racing School in Greenville, South Carolina for our 10th anniversary. It was a fascinating and masterful application of performance science as we went through various aspects of driving challenges with pro racers. One of the early basics they taught us was how to navigate sharp turns and curves at high speed. Since our brains follow our eyes, when we look at where we want to go, we create a successful turn even under pressure. If we look at the obstacle we want to avoid, our brain follows our eyes there too, and we always get what we focus on. Focus on avoiding the obstacle, and you'll regularly hit it. When a coach focuses on what not to do with players, it becomes a prelude to a choke. An individual getting analytical, especially self-critical, disrupts the flow of the bottom-up system to move outside the zone to become an observer with the prefrontal cortex. That means you move from the playing field to the observer's platform, which disrupts play by definition. This most fundamental principle is one we know quite well from neuroscience and quantum physics. You get what you focus on, not what you want. So look at where you want to go from the next curve to 20 years from now. Michael Phelps, the most decorated Olympian with 22 medals, including 18 golds, described the significance of focus. He put it this way: when I'm focused, there is not one single thing, person, anything that can stand in my way of doing something. If I want something bad enough, I'm going to get there. We literally mold our brain pathways and synaptic connections by what we focus on. New neuronal networks and pathways are created when you focus on solutions. But the already existing circuitry is further etched when you focus on existing problems, even if you try to solve them. This is why people can get stuck in therapy or in simply seeing more problems. This concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is way more effective than a problem focus. Possibilities instead of problems. These brain connections literally become mind maps and subsequently influence the reality that we see. Now, we can't control what happens to us, but we can determine how much it affects us and where we direct our focus and attention. A simple example is that rather than focusing on obstacles that hold us back, to refocus on things that move us forward and the positive connections. So here's a very basic three-step summary of how to specifically counter negative thoughts or negative self-talk. Reframe the thought as an error message from your brain. Delete it. Refocus on what you do want that's positive and part of your plan. Maybe even consider visually a delete button in your brain so that when you think of something negative or have an intrusive thought, as you consider it an error message from your brain, it becomes a simple visualization of deleting that negative thought. In other words, don't believe everything you think. So, let's talk now about how to regulate states of mind and manage emotions. A state of mind, as we've discussed, is a state of particular emotions, memories, mental models, and behavior patterns. Again, like a software program. A key element of mastery is to become aware of various states of mind with particular focus on which state works best for what purpose. The greatest challenge is to regulate states of mind through various emotional triggers and charged situations. It's the most important variable to determine successful performance of any type, athletic to intellectual. The state of mind determines the meaning you attach, and the meaning determines behavior. So by changing the state of mind, you change the behavior. Self-regulation is the key ingredient to optimum performance, from executive to academic to athletic. At times, the foreground challenge may be to delay an impulse. The greater the emotional charge, the stronger the challenge to put an impulse into action, or the urge to put an impulse into action. Emotion can trump even the best plans. And when an urge is fused with action, impulsivity results. That's the definition of impulsivity, fusing urge with action. A pause between urge and action creates a contemplative space, a potential space where judgment resides. So here's what we know now. A gap in performance has more to do with mindset than with motivation and intelligence and practice. When a performer in any endeavor, athlete, surgeon, executive, has practiced essentially the same thousands of hours as the next person, optimum outcome is determined more by specific mental state for optimum performance. So consider some of the factors that lower the threshold to emotional triggers that can predispose a compromised performance. Preset meanings like certain biases, depleted energy, distraction, emotional overwhelm, too many choices, significant emotional charge like certain emotional triggers, or after experiencing ineffectiveness or powerlessness. One example of such an influence is how even slightly depleted energy can cause people to fall back to an earlier default mode of thinking and deciding. In a study reported in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, 8 parole judges were studied for 3 years for their decision-making regarding applications granted for parole. The average rate of granting parole was 35%. The exact time of each decision was studied in relation to the judge's three food breaks, morning, lunch, and afternoon. What they found was this. After each meal, 65% of requests were granted. It doubled. Just before noon, just before the end of the day, when their blood glucose was lowest, the approval rate dropped to almost 0%. At these times of low blood sugar and greater fatigue, they resorted to more critical and judgmental thinking. Now, this is something to consider. I introduced this story as one of a series of strategies to a financial consultant in mentor coaching with me who had an upcoming 3.5-hour meeting with a client who would be potentially investing $35 million with her. First question I asked was, what time do you meet? When do you plan a snack break? And we were serious, and there are some other factors that we may have time to go into, but they worked. That's the bottom line. No matter how fancy the theory, does it work? So let's look at the state of flow. So as few as 20% of people actually have a flow experience on a daily basis, and 15% of people never really experience flow at all. So here's what I mean by flow. In the zone of flow, we're most likely to perform at our personal best. This is what we refer to as being in the zone. We most readily acquire and integrate new skills in deliberate practice. A typical result of not being in a zone of flow is that attention scatters. The zone experience is one of optimal performance, not only in sports, but in any area of functioning, including executive and parenting. Flow is a very specific state of mind of remaining absolutely in the present moment to access and sustain peak performance. That's what I suggested about doing a brief mindfulness meditation or a brief grounding and centering exercise to get in state before you sign on with a client or whatever you do to get in a state that is specific for that kind of optimum performance. One pro athlete I work with came to incorporate and apply everything that we talked about in regulating states of mind and entering the flow of his performance mindset in his all-star career. After each play, he would automatically say to himself, reset. He knew that in order not to have an excitement or a disappointment carry over to affect his next sequence, he had to reset. In a grounded and centered state of mind, he had access to all of his incredible skill for optimum performance. Any disruptive emotion after a big win or a big loss or disappointment can hijack attention and disrupt flow. So we need a way to manage emotions and regulate states of mind, especially at these times. So let's look now, and if you look in your outline, at the neuroconditioning chart. The neuroconditioning chart, it's in the exercises section at the end of the outline. We're going to address self-regulation in a systematic way. So to illustrate the neuroconditioning chart, I want to tell you how I initially developed it. A client I'll call Barbara began one of our executive mentor coaching sessions to say she wanted to move to a personal focus for the upcoming Thanksgiving holidays with her family. She mentioned a pattern that each time she goes home to her family, usually for one major holiday a year, she notices the same problems. And she described the pattern with some embarrassment. She said, "We have a big family gathering where my parents, brother, and sister and their families all come together for holiday weekend, usually 3 days. I resolve before I leave that this time is going to be different. I will not get into any arguments or struggles with my parents and my brother and sister. I focus intensely on being balanced and not getting upset. I can usually last most of the first day, but then something happens and I just lose it. I get in a fight with one of the family, and then it seems to escalate, and then I'm in a fight with all of them. We're in a standoff for at least the 2 days of the three." So I first reflected, remember I said state comes before strategy and story, I first reflected on how frustrating this must be for her to want an enjoyable holiday with her family, and how upsetting it was for her when this wasn't the case. Well, she wholeheartedly agreed. I asked, At the time you're in the middle of that upset, in arguments with him, what's the age of that conversation? Now, she needed no explanation. She immediately knew what I meant. Early adolescence. It's like I'm 13 or 14 instantly and totally at that time, and I'm stuck there for the rest of the visit. I asked her specifically what she was aware of that triggered her reactions. She described a particular look from her dad, a way he would roll his eyes, a word from her mom, a gesture from her brother that would instantly create the state change to her reactive mode of adolescent turmoil. I recommended that she schedule a time, an appointment with herself to do a brainstorming session, at least 30 minutes, where there were no interruptions, no distractions, that she could reflect on a new plan. I suggested that she do this, that she write a list of the emotional triggers that she was aware of with each member of her family. This is column one that you see. I emphasized that she remained grounded and centered while she was doing this to remain as an observer, to not re-enter the state of upset with each trigger. And I suggested then that for each emotional trigger in her column one, that she put beside it, in column two, her usual response, the thoughts, feelings, behaviors. This column two, her usual behavior, an instantly altered state of mind, would include thoughts, feelings, behaviors, negative self-talk that were her automatic reaction to the emotional trigger. This was her age 13 time capsule. I suggested then that at a later time, at least 24 hours later, that she schedule another brainstorming session with herself, that she would think about two things. A mantra for getting centered and present for each emotional trigger, for column three. Now, a mantra consists of three parts. A cue to initiate the process. Barbara used the cue of touching her ring. It was something that nobody would notice, but it was a specific cue. A focus phrase to align the energy field of her brain. Hers was relaxed and powerful. And third, a physiology, a deep breath for relaxation. She would breathe in deeply and exhale and do that twice. Now, each emotional trigger deserves its own pairing with a mantra and ideal response. So then, in a fourth column, to write an ideal response for each emotional trigger in column one. This proactive planning, instead of her usual reactive response, created a game plan for her personally challenging situation. So the idea of column one is to identify the emotional trigger that sets this reactive chain in motion, beginning with a state change, the column two. You most likely can't change the external cue, but the recognition can begin a different trajectory for handling it internally and externally. She sent me her initial draft of the four columns. I emphasized that the purpose of the first two columns was just to cue her radar and recognize not only the triggers, column one, but the resultant state change and content for column two as quickly as possible in order to, instead of staying stuck in it for the 3 days, to use the mantra to get grounded and centered, column three, in the present. Then to already have a pre-planned ideal response to engage, column four. In our first session after the Thanksgiving holiday, I was really eager to hear how it went. She immediately began the session by saying it was the best holiday she'd ever had with her family. There were times of challenge. There were even times when she would excuse herself to use the privacy of a walk or just go into the next room to get grounded and centered again in order to engage the behavior and her plan that she really wanted. She was immensely pleased with her work, as I was for her. So now, a review of the steps of the neuroconditioning chart. Column one, the emotional triggers. Again, the idea is to recognize them. Column two, the usual response, the altered state, the content of the time capsule. Certain emotional triggers have the impact of creating an instantaneous state change to re-enter an earlier state. Immediately upon entry, everything's the same. J. just the same as it was when the state of mind was first created. All the feelings, associations, perceptions, anxieties, frustration, negative self-talk, all are part of the experience preserved in that time capsule. The state change only takes a nanosecond, and a shift to state of mind is so common and imperceptible that it becomes invisible. These sometimes decades-old patterns of thoughts and feelings have not changed since the time capsule of each state of mind when it was formed. It will always be the same inside it. These time capsules also house earlier selves, experiences that come from an earlier time and place, yet can be instantly activated with full immersion in the experience of that state of mind in this moment. Here's the key point. It immediately seems like the content, whether that's the self-talk, the messages, the negative assumptions, created this state rather than it being the result of the state. That's important. The emotional trigger created the state change. All the content that's there will never change, so there's no reason doing any coaching on that. This is about the process. Our compulsion to repeat is unrelenting, yet in repetition, we re-enter that time capsule and its unchanging narrative script. This repetition becomes familiar, even creating the sense of effectiveness in knowing the outcome. It's as if the story we tell ourselves about who we really are becomes who we really are, our core identity, our reality. At times, it's hard to distinguish the stories of a situation from the situation itself. Now, let's look at column three just a bit more, the mantra. Here's a story that illustrates. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach, Robert Reed, arrived, his team ranked 217th in free throw percentage, lowest in their division nationwide. During practice, Reed had his players develop a mantra before each free shot. It would be a cue, such as dribbling the basketball twice, a three or four word phrase, and he suggested relaxed and smooth, but emphasized that each of the players develop their own, and a deep breath to breathe in relaxation and breathe out any tension. After 2 years, they would practice this way every time before every shot they did the mantra. They moved from 217th in free throw percentage in their division nationwide to number one in free throw percentage in their division nationwide. Now, column four, ideal responses. For each emotional trigger, have a pre-planned ideal response, especially focusing on behavior. This pre-planning simplifies the process to move immediately into an ideal behavior rather than to have to plan it after getting regulated and grounded. The repetition of these four steps will result in neuroconditioning, rewiring the brain. That's why it's called the neuroconditioning chart. It actually rewires your brain after enough repetition. So the flow across all four columns, the neuroconditioning chart brings conscious recognition of an emotional trigger that's otherwise instantaneously creating a state change to an old state of mind with all of the inherent feelings and behaviors and beliefs. So in summary, column one and column two, the emotional trigger and usual response, or simply to recognize more quickly an emotional trigger and the state change that it immediately induces. Cueing your radar to recognize this as quickly as possible means you can see the process of the state change rather than staying stuck in the content or getting lost in the content or trying to revise the content or create a better ending this time around. Like a time capsule, that content will never change. You can't think, reason, feel, figure, therapize, or coach your way out of a state of mind within the content. Rather than getting lost in the content of the state, which is common to do, instead address the process by getting grounded and centered to then move into a pre-planned ideal response for each emotional trigger. As you do this repeatedly, you'll notice two things. The first is that you repeat your mantra of the cue, focus, phrase, and physiology, such as deep breathing. You'll notice simply after a while the cue alone will be sufficient to induce a deep, grounded, and centered state. For example, Barbara came to see by Christmas time that she could simply touch her ring and immediately create that grounded and centered state. You don't have to do the focus phrase in physiology each time. This is the first phase of neural conditioning. You've rewired your brain to use an automatic cue to induce a state. I'll tell you some more application of this next time. As you move through all four steps to ultimately engage an ideal response, when you repeat it enough, it'll rewire your brain. Ultimately, an emotional trigger will automatically couple with that balanced state of mind and ideal response. In other words, the trigger won't be triggering. This is the hard work miracle. Your brain has rewired its operating system. And elite performers in business, sports, and the arts know and live the wisdom that the more enjoyable the experience, the better the performance will be. And I want to close with the words of my favorite grandmother. Some of you have heard me say this before. She said it very simply. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Okay, we're in discussion mode now. I'm interested in thoughts or questions or any clarifications that you have about what we talked about. Is this making sense, beginning to address some of the questions that you have?
Hi, this is Catherine. Absolutely. It's exactly what, and actually I just had a session with a client just before this class, and this is exactly where he was caught up in that negative self-talk. So this is exactly what I was looking for as well. So perfect sense.
Well, I designed an entire seminar for you when you talked about folks. So this one's for you. And we're going to return to self-talk
in
a subsequent seminar. Go ahead. I interrupted you.
But, oh, no, you're fine. No, but it's great. It absolutely makes sense. Yes.
Okay, super. All right. Others, your thoughts, questions, or any clarifications that you have?
This is Sarah. I really enjoyed your talk. It emphasized a lot of really good points in terms of our work as coaches and really solidified some of the things that, as a pretty new coach, I'm starting to do and starting to build my own toolbox of strategies. But I meet so many clients that really get in their own way in terms of these stories that they tell themselves. And so it was really interesting to hear kind of like the neuroplasticity piece and some of the neuroscience behind that. It was really, really great.
Great. I'm glad it was useful. And to look at what you said, a principle there is every client is doing their very best job possible to show you exactly what it's like to be them. So they will create the process of what's getting in their way. They will show you the various kinds of attachment and behavior and emotional patterns that they have so that you can come to understand them together and collaborate to create a revised or new story. So this is exactly why they need you. If they could do this themselves, they wouldn't need you. So this is exactly why they're coming to you. And remember, 90 to 95% of the operating system is unconscious. They're not always going to be able to tell you, this is my problem, this is what I want to focus on, this is what I want to take away. They may know that, but yet what you're going to see is the process of their experience and the very things that create the compromises, for example, are going to be recreated in the relationship with you. So this is where you have to be able to create a working alliance so that you can get away with saying whatever you need to say to a client and continue that collaborative mode where you can co-create a new story together that's going to work significantly better, more effectively and successfully for your clients. Well, if you have questions that we didn't address, jot them down or send them to me in an email. I'll be happy to address them also at the beginning of next seminar. We're going to talk about the neuroscience of peak performance in our next seminar. So I look forward to that and have a great rest of the week. Thank you for your energy and input. You've really brought it alive and made it much more meaningful for our discussion. So I look forward to picking up right here next time. Thanks so very much.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.